This is El Puente Podcast with
Kim,
Dave, and Michael. Conversations at the intersection of race, sexuality, religion, politics, art, music, and everything in between.
We're stronger when we build puentes to connect the POVs and POCs.
We're back, everybody. It's been a hot minute since you guys have heard from us, but we're back.
Yay!
We took a little bit longer than expected hiatus from our Christmas special.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all because we've been kind of crazy and doing all kinds of stuff. Lots of news to report to you guys on the personal front. Michael is up to some amazing things.
Yes.
Kim is back up to some amazing things. I'm here.
You're up to amazing things
here.
As well.
But there's so much to get you guys caught up on. Michael, I think, what's going on with you? There's so much happening in your
life. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So
yes.
Since December, I was applying to some grad school programs to work in my MFA after putting it off for years and years and years. Again, like kind of we'd mentioned earlier, Kim, like this fear that kind of gets into you when you want to try something and change things. And, you know, and I'll admit, like I had some definite like imposter syndrome issues going on.
What's imposter syndrome?
Where you feel like you don't really deserve all the things that you've achieved, kind of thing.
Okay.
In a way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it happens to all people, but it disproportionately happens to a lot of people of color and queer people too, just because you have society telling you you're not all that.
Mm.
And even though you have the evidence right in front of you that you're doing things and getting things done. So like I had to just like push through that. And also, I mean, I had the fear too of like, you know, I'm 45 and going back to school is kind of,
it's not easy.
That's a huge hump.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then just having this fear of like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to get back into debt, et cetera.
So where are you at in the process now then?
So I have been officially accepted to one school.
Very nice.
And got offered a fellowship to attend there.
Wow. Yeah.
Congratulations.
So amazing, Michael.
But it only covers half of the tuition for those 2 years I'll be in the program.
Got it.
So I got to ask them for more money somehow, see if I can negotiate that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also waiting for another school. And now that one would be fully funded. So if I get into that... it would be great.
Yeah.
And also maybe I could use it as a bargaining chip with the other school and be like, hey, they're
off. Or we can also always do GoFundMe.
There you go.
Probably not. Probably not.
No.
Kim, what about you? What's going on with you, girl?
I go to a Unity church and I sang the line today from Unwritten that says, reaching for something in the distance, so close I can almost taste it. And I feel that's where I'm at. I feel like I'm really close to a big breakthrough, but I just need the push. Like I'm having a hard time. I know that I need to meditate and listen, like slow down and listen. And I know I need to make my life less hectic. I just don't know how to do it. I'm stuck in the pattern and I don't know how to get
out of it.
Out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
I am trying to find the answer that's going to help me to go ahead and, you know, face, you know, the next stage of my life, you know. And
do you know what that next stage looks like yet, or
I know that it would involve more performing.
Yeah.
And I know that it would involve more writing.
Yeah.
And me spending more time with artistic endeavors versus slaving in the schools.
Yes, mama. Mm. Yes, mama. Yes.
So I got to figure that out.
Yes.
How can I be a good teacher by the district standard? How do I keep my job but still meet the standard of like sacrificing everything?
Yes. And that's a hard
to be
thing.
A good teacher.
Yeah, and that's hard because like you're the only person that does what you do at your school.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm making sense.
No, it does. Yeah, it's working smarter, not harder.
Yeah, that I mean that's saying. The gist
that's
of it.
That's my mantra.
But how do you find it?
Well, I don't think they make it easy for us to find. And I can't help but listen to both of you guys and thinking about my own life and what I'm going through, too. I mean, Kim, I'm right there with you. I would very much like the next phase to start. And the next phase I vision is just me living out more of my artistic desires and my artistic journey as opposed to just worrying about paying the rent.
Yes.
And paying the bills and working this job that it feeds me in certain ways, but not at the core of my creative being.
Right.
And so it's hard for us to do that. It's hard for all artists to do that because of the society that we live in. This society rewards being a slave to a certain job because that job will give you certain benefits in life.
Yeah.
As opposed to really pursuing your passions, because in many cases, pursuing your passions can be de-incentivized by the lack of things like healthcare,
yes,
or insurance, or you know, childcare, or a livable wage. I mean, you're forced to make these sacrifices, and a lot of candidates are talking about the fact that a 21st century economy needs to recognize that the time for being job locked are over.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the previous generation. You know, we stayed in a job that we probably didn't like our entire career until we retired because we were locked into that job because we needed insurance. We need health insurance from that job. That's what my mother did. That's what my father did. And that's probably what our grandparents did too, right? Yep. You stayed at a job because you had to.
Absolutely.
And the pension.
And the pension. But all of that is going away.
Right.
And it's not indicative of the reality that certainly people today are experiencing. People are wanting to go from job to job, but that's a risk.
Yeah,
that's a risk. And I think that's what you're dealing with right now is like, how do I take that risk? But I have a family, you know, and I have people I need to take care of.
Right.
Michael, you've grown up, you've paid your debts, you've done your dues, and yet you want to make the next step in your life. And it's a risk because you've got this thing over your head. Yeah. How do I pay for this?
But I also have like the privilege of like, I'm single. I don't have any dependents.
Yeah.
And so,
but you're not trying to rack up a bunch of debt either.
No.
Right. And that's the trap. That's the thing, right? Well, all of this is very, very timely considering what our first news story of today is. So I think we should talk about that.
The news.
So this week, the big news, of course, was Bernie Sanders' not-so-surprised win in the Nevada caucus. And now he is the leader in delegates for the Democratic nomination. Cue the scary music. Democrats are freaking out. Exit polls indicate that Bernie won by amassing a coalition of young Latinos, a parity of black voters on par with Vice President Biden. And he won a substantial portion of the union votes in Nevada. That was a big test for Bernie because union leadership recently came out and refused to endorse his campaign because they're kind of afraid of his Medicare for All proposal. And the reason why they are spooked by that and unions across the country is because his basic proposal is to take away private insurance completely, get rid of it, and impose government-run health insurance for all. Well, why do unions not like that? They've spent a lot of blood, sweat, and tears negotiating with their employers for, in many cases, very good health care. So it's got a lot of people on edge. And, you know, but he was the winner. He now is clearly the man to beat. Kim, before we started recording, you had some thoughts about all of the state of the race.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about where we stand?
I am struggling on a candidate to pick because whereas I love Bernie's no-nonsense, just really cut to the chase as far as what needs to be addressed. I love that I believe he would get things done. I worry that in some ways, in pushing his agenda, he's going to be too pushy. And I'm not sure that we would win with him because of that. Like, people coming to the conclusion that he is someone that is going to be my way or the highway type. 'Cause
who do you think that's going to alienate?
Well, I mean, I think there's some, I really am worried about the middle, the swing votes. And in every...
You mean the same swing votes that voted for Cheeto, who like has the that to the nth degree?
I do feel like there are some voters out there who were affected by Trump's corruptness and could be swung our way.
But maybe not by a candidate like Bernie.
Right.
Well, your fears are definitely in line with, I think, a lot of fears of people in the Democratic establishment. Just 3 points that, you know, we've noticed, or that I've noticed in reading about this. So first, many do fear that just having a Democratic socialist, right, at the top of the ticket will make it too easy for Trump to win a re-election. And even worse, possibly affect a lot of down ballot races where we could, worst case scenario, lose the Congress again and then have Trump as president. I mean, we'd be back where we were a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah.
Second point, if you're watching the dynamics of this current race this year in 2020, a lot of people have noticed that what's happening on the Democratic side is exactly the same thing that happened on the Republican side, being that when Trump was running in 2016, he was winning these contests with about 30% of the vote. Where was the rest of the vote going? Well, it was split up amongst all these other different candidates.
Yes.
And that's how Trump was able to get in with such a small number.
Right.
That's exactly what's going on with Bernie. Bernie is winning these contests, you know, with a sizable portion, but not a vast majority. Where's the rest of the vote? Well, it's split up against other candidates like Buttigieg, Klobuchar, Biden,
Warren.
But Warren is kind of in that same kind of field as Bernie. I think when they join forces, it'll be overpowering probably. But the moderates, we'll call them moderates. I'm doing air quotes for those you can't see. The moderates in the party, they're splitting up that moderate vote. And so Bernie is getting in there. And then the third point I'll just make is that what you were saying about how he you think that he could alienate those swing voters.
Yeah.
Well, the biggest test to that is that Medicare for All proposal. Whereas people like me, I'm a Democratic socialist. I see the benefit of Medicare for All. That's what I want. That's exactly what we were talking about a second ago. It's like we need to transition to a system, in my opinion, where our healthcare needs are not dictated by where we work.
Right.
But just the fact that we are alive should be enough to ensure that we have health care. And if I want to go write a novel, but I can still pay my rent.
Yes.
Then I should be able to do that. Yeah. I should not be trapped in this job that I don't want because I'm afraid of losing my health insurance.
I agree.
So that's really, but that's a hard sell. Why? Because a lot of people are afraid of the unknown.
Right.
And they're afraid of
change.
Things that change. Things that they have. I have this thing that I, you know, this insurance I have from my job. Mm-hmm. And not knowing what is going to replace that is a really hard sell for a lot of moderates. So, so I think this election is a really big test for, you know, our courage as a country and as a political party. Like, do we really believe in the change or not? You know,
exactly. No, and that's what he represents. I mean, he's not outwardly saying it as much as like Obama did. Like, you know, that means like his phrase, you know, is the change thing, but and hope. But like, he's doing that with his ideas, his proposals. One thing I would go back to what you were thinking is as far as like trying to get those swing voters. I think that would be great. What we need, though, is a candidate who's going to get those people, the vast majority of Americans who didn't vote at all last time, to step up.
Yeah.
Because you have the big old Cheeto heads.
But are they going to step up for him?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's something, if they could see the benefits of what he's trying to give them, you know, I'd be interested to see the demographics of the majority of people who didn't vote or don't ever vote.
Yeah.
And see what's keeping them from voting? Who are they? That's what I want to see. And then another point I wanted to make was, so far through these caucuses, in the primaries, Bernie has had the highest turnout of young voters of all the candidates. I think all the candidates combined. So that's promising. He also has like the broadest coalition of people of different backgrounds supporting him.
That's great.
So I think he has, what, the highest percentage of Latino?
Certainly Latinos. He won Latinos huge in Nevada.
Yeah. Yeah.
And young people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The next test is what, South Carolina?
South Carolina's coming up next.
And that has the highest percentage of African-American voters.
That's right.
So that'll be telling, too. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, because we need that. That's what got Obama in office was he was able to activate these people, a lot of whom didn't vote. You know, and for some people were like, oh, well, he got the black people to vote because he's black.
No, but I think he got people to vote because he gave hope. And yes, that's where I worry with Bernie, mm-hmm, because he doesn't have the charisma that Obama had, you know, to win people's hearts in the sense of giving them.
Yeah, he's not as charismatic.
He is. I think you used the word, what was it that you used with Elizabeth Warren? Polarizing.
Yeah.
I think that he can be polarizing, certainly because of that socialist label.
Yeah.
So that is the fear. That is danger. I think that is the test. Mm-hmm. You guys are literally mm-hmm vocalizing what the test is for this primary, which mm-hmm is, on the one hand, Michael, mobilizing people who heretofore have not been mobilizable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who don't get out and vote unless they see something in the candidate that they want and that they've been wanting and they're not getting from other candidates. And if young people are coming out for Bernie, it's because they see in him mm-hmm true change mm-hmm of the revolution that they've been wanting.
Well, that's
and
true.
That's his he whole does pitch is revolution.
Yeah.
I do like that.
Versus the other side, which is, but can he win? Fear, you know.
And that's the point I was going to make is like, where that point of view is coming from, the direction of fear.
Wow.
And think about it. Back in 2008, we were also like, oh, we love, you know, Obama sounds great. But we were afraid, like, can a black man win in this country?
Right, and I never thought it would happen.
And it did.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
So.
And they called him a socialist, but he wasn't.
And they called him a Muslim, and he wasn't.
Yeah.
They called him all kinds of things. That's true.
Thank you for bringing up the fear thing. But how do we then reach people to encourage them to let go of the fear? Because that's
absolutely
really hard.
Absolutely. That's the, mm-hmm, I think honestly, it comes down to, we're going to have to fight for this one. If you Bernie is your guy, you have to understand that it's not going to be enough to just nominate him and sit back and hope for the best. You've got to get out there, get engaged, and educate a bunch of people, because it only takes a cursory view of like message boards and chat rooms and things like that to see that the other side is already animated by the whole socialist thing.
Yeah.
Like, they are out in force. You cannot read a comment about Bernie on some social media and not see the word, you know, not see, oh, he's going to turn us into Venezuela. He's going to turn us into this socialist country or that. It's like, oh my God.
It's so ironic because the Congress and Senate and everybody that works for the government is living off the government.
Yeah.
They're being supported by the government. And
even after they don't work for the government.
Yeah, exactly.
Anymore.
It's like you are you know what I'm saying? Socialism, in some ways,
yes,
you're receiving the benefits of a socialist mentality.
Well, as Bernie pointed out recently in a recent debate, you know, and he quoted MLK, Martin Luther King, about this. You know, Martin Luther King is famous for saying that here in America, we have socialism for the rich and rugged individualism for the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
that's really deep. That's true. I feel
it's
that
true
way.
It's absolutely true. So we'll see. But it'll definitely be a race to follow.
Life is confusing. Sometimes you need clarification. Look no further than your fellow humans' tweets and memes and everything in between for life's sweet answers. And you no longer need to ask, what exactly do you mean?
From @Jules_SU. Okay boomer doesn't mean okay person born between 1946 and 1964. It means okay person born into uniquely prosperous circumstances, built on the backs of colonialism, slavery, and white supremacy, who believes that this prosperity was not only normal, but legitimately earned. and who is doing everything in their power to dismiss and disempower those not born into similar circumstances, for fear that even slightly encroaching on the immense privilege that they only used to enrich themselves at everyone else's expense.
From Unknown. In my opinion, the weirdest thing accepted by society is the pronunciation of Colonel.
From at Crystals and Shit. Hey girl, friendly reminder to apply for that job you're not qualified for, because neither are the white men that currently work there. Toodaloo.
From at the Noah Kingsley. Your stripper name is your favorite salad dressing and the thing about you that most disappoints your parents.
From at the Rona Lisa. Should I go to grad school, quotes, is the new, quotes, should I get bangs?
From Unknown. Democratic socialism isn't free stuff. It's getting what you paid for with your taxes rather than giving it away to war and corporate subsidies.
From at DSA underscore Los Angeles. You're, quote, just not into politics. Your boss is. Your landlord is. Your insurance company is. And every day they use their political power to keep your pay low, raise your rent, and deny you coverage. It's time to get into politics.
From at Bear Cove. When the dispensary looks and operates like an Apple store, it's time to release a lot of incarcerated human beings. A lot.
From Unknown. This customer walks in 10 seconds before we closed, and she had the audacity to yell, "Yay, I made it!" Bitch, made what? Made me mad?
From Unknown. The world's not flat, you idiots. It's not even round.
The world is a vampire.
From Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. In any other country, Joe Biden and I would not be in the same party. But in America, we are.
And from Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Whites, it must be frankly said, are not putting in a similar mass effort to re-educate themselves out of their racial ignorance. Those are all the tweets and memes and everything in between that we have for this week. If you have any you'd like to share with us, let us know on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Or you can email us at bocamadremedia@gmail.com. The world's potentially first drag queen or recorded drag queen may have been discovered.
This story is fascinating, ladies and gentlemen. So there's a researcher named Channing Gerard Joseph. He's a researcher. He's a journalist. He's a former drag queen himself. He's also a professor at the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. And he's written a book called House of Swan, where the slaves became queens, okay?
Ooh.
He did some research, and he documents the life of William Dorsey Swan, who Joseph believes actually was the world's first self-described drag queen. And this could not be more of a crazy story. So we're talking about a former slave.
Yeah.
Okay, in the 1800s, some important points to point out. Okay, so apparently Mr. Swan was born in 1858. Okay, so when did the Civil War end? 64.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, 64.
Endured slavery, civil war, racism, you know, you can imagine, torture. I mean, all kinds of crazy shit. Joseph explains that he discovered Swan while researching at Columbia University 15 years ago when he discovered a Washington Post article dated from April 13th, 1888. Okay. Headlined, Negro Dive Raided, 13 men dressed as women, surprised at supper and arrested. Can you imagine that party? We're talking about 1888.
What does 1888 drag look like?
I mean, what does former slave drag look like? I mean, fascinating. Anyway, so he was apparently Mr. Swan was imprisoned for running a brothel for about 10 months.
But it was false.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it wasn't really broad. I'm sure he was just getting hated on.
Of course.
Right. He had actually even asked for a pardon from President Grover Cleveland. I mean, we're talking about a man who'd probably been persecuted his whole life, right? I mean, anyway, it's just a fascinating story because, I mean, just putting ourselves to where we're at right now in terms of Black rights, and then of course gay rights, and now trans rights, to try to even imagine what the life of a former slave who was also gay and, you know, expressing themselves, their sexuality at that time.
I mean, you know, if you think about it, like, I mean, drag's been around since the beginning. I mean, you think of like Shakespearean plays, or you think, you know, Greece, like it's always been there. But so, but he's saying this is the first person who referred to themselves as a drag queen. I think that's just amazing. Like, they basically coined the term drag queen. And in that time period, and like you said, under that pressure of like being a former slave, where, you know, they knew they were not going to be treated equally in society as it is, but they felt they had to express themselves as who they were through the drag. On top of that, that's a strong ass person right there.
That is real history there. That is the history you'd never really hear in the history books. So, I mean, just kudos to this researcher, Mr. Channing Joseph, first of all, for digging in and diving and getting this history that, you know, it's just fascinating. And if you're wondering what happened to Mr. Swan after all of that, well, apparently he passed on the legacy of drag to his little brother. Is that what I'm reading right, Kim?
Yeah. His brother began making costumes for the drag community and continued until his death in 1954.
Wow.
That's a legacy. That's amazing.
That's a fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. Yes, God.
Yes. And in fact, Mr. Swan is famous for having done a show back in D.C. back in the 1800s with RuPaul herself.
Are you trying to get us sued, bitch?
Yeah, I know, right? Well, this next thing just burns my biscuits, y'all. It is an ay, mi gente. Oh, my people.
An ay, mi gente.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So, I don't know if y'all have heard, but the former NBA star Dwayne Wade is hearing a lot of BS from African-American rappers and entertainers after publicly supporting his trans daughter, Zaya.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, really?
Yeah.
People, why do we gotta hate? Why do we gotta bring ourselves down?
This story burns my biscuits, too. So I'm not really a basketball fan. So I don't really follow basketball, but I've been following this story because of the uniqueness of the fact that it's an NBA former star whose daughter is, you know, coming out. It's 12-year-old Zaya, right?
Right.
She is, you know, old enough now where she's really expressing her true gender. And Mr. Wade and his wife, Gabriella Union, are really publicly supporting
Zaya. They should.
Of course. As parents should.
Right. Yeah. But ay mi gente.
They're
getting a lot of flack from people, right? They're getting a lot of flack. One thing that apparently all this came out when Wade publicly voiced some support on the Ellen DeGeneres show. Mm-hmm. I believe it was February 11th. I guess that got a lot of people's attention. In the Black community, especially.
Yeah. Just because he's supporting his child that says that she wants to be referred to with female pronouns. I mean, it's about unconditional love and supporting your child. How is that a bad thing? But of course.
What was the statement the family put out there?
Yes. The statement they put out was, "This is her life every day. This is no game to us. We're all about protecting her heart. We're all about protecting her joy. And to do that, we have to support her."
Yeah. That's a
That's what parents should do.
Yes. Yes.
Well, common sense apparently didn't apply to people like Boosie Badass or Young Thug, two entertainers who recently faced a lot of controversy for some of their transphobic ranting that they did directed directly at Dwayne Wade and his daughter, Zaya. One quote really burnt my biscuits when I read it. Apparently from Boosie Badass, he wrote, "Dwayne Wade, you gone too fucking far, dog. This is a male, a 12-year-old. Don't cut his dick off, bruh." That was apparently a message directed at the Wade family, which is just...
Well, first of all, it's ignorant because, and honestly, unfortunately, a lot of uneducated people, even myself, thought, you know, trans meant that it was about your genitalia. But it's so narrow-minded to boil it down to that. And it is so stereotypical straight male to go straight for, oh, let's boil it all down to someone's dick.
Yeah.
The it's value all about of the penis. Dick. Yes.
Yeah. Only to straight male. Young Thug was a little bit, I guess, not as crude as Boozy Badass, but Young Thug got in some trouble too. He said he actually directed some of his comments to Zaya and saying, quote, "All I want to say to Wade's son is God don't make mistakes, but hey, live your true self." So the offensive thing for me, most of that is
the misgendering.
Well, it's misgendering, right? But then also, and just saying, you know, that whole flip it, God doesn't make mistakes. You know, he made you have, it's like that whole thing. But even that's not the most offensive to me. The thing that really burns my biscuits with what he said is he directed it to Zaya. He directed it to her. It's like, you don't need to talk to Mr. Wade's daughter. Okay, you can spread your vial, but you don't have to. You don't have to direct that to my daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's I just draw that a little too far.
Yeah. I mean, you would never say that.
Personal comment.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. People hide. That's what I hate about this whole Twitter generation is that they will hide behind a tweet. Would you ever? Would he have said that if the daughter was right there in the room? Would he have said that to her, especially with a parent there too? Mm-mm. No, it's just like. These false balls that people grow. And it's like, really?
I love
let's
that.
See, false let's balls. See you say that in real life to someone's face. Mm. You would never do that because you know you're out of line.
Yeah. 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 The funniest thing to come out of the story is what happened to Boozy Badass about this. Apparently, he made this comment on a social media post in front of a Planet Fitness. And the next day he went to work out at the Planet Fitness. The gay manager or desk person wouldn't let him into the gym because of the comments. Yeah, he saw them and he was like, no, you don't get to come in. And apparently Boozy Badass went on a rant, anti-Planet Fitness rant, saying, you know, they got cockroaches up in there. They wouldn't let me in because of some shit that I said on social media. Yeah, because you were being ignorant.
Yeah. Offensive.
And offensive. To a lot of people.
Yeah.
To a lot. Yeah.
If they got cockroaches, they don't need one more.
That's right.
So stay out.
Always be nice to the gay attendants that work at your gym, bitch. They know all your secrets. Well, anyways, we have to give our support to Zaya. And because, you know, she's probably going through a lot being the daughter of somebody who's very famous and going through all of that. So, and kudos too to the Wade family for.
Yes.
Just showing, you know, the other
side. That's how it's done.
How it's done. Black excellence and then just parental excellence, too.
Yeah.
Hola, mi gente. Bienvenidos a mi rancho. Como me lo han estado pidiendo, hoy les voy a hacer unos chilaquiles verdes. Y los voy a hacer como los preparo yo aquí en mi rancho. Aquí tengo 5 chiles serranos, 1/2 kilo de tomate, unas ramitas de cilantro, 2 dientes de ajo y una cebolla y 2 bisteces. Y ahorita les voy a dorar las tortillas. Son frías para que se doren bonito, para que queden bien sabrosos.
So what you just heard was Doña Angelita. Are you guys familiar with her?
I love her.
Yes.
Oh, I got to see her and I just fell in love with her.
Yeah, she's this adorable little Mexican abuelita. Who's become famous on the internet by sharing her traditional Mexican recipes from her region. And on this channel on YouTube called De Mi Rancho a Tu Cocina, which means from my ranch to your kitchen. Well, she was just recently recognized by YouTube as a leading influencer on their platform.
Yes.
Yeah, she's adorable. And I first discovered her because I am teaching about YouTube videos and how, you know, kids nowadays and obviously not just kids can use the platform to earn money, you know, promote themselves, promote culture, promote knowledge. I mean, YouTube has really changed everything.
Oh, yes.
You know, the way we acquire knowledge. Just think about, I mean, you talk about this all the time with your son, for example. I mean,
yeah.
YouTube is...
He wants to be a YouTuber.
Yeah, there you go. He wants to be a YouTuber.
It's a huge influence. But what's great about this is that she has embraced modern technology and is using that to bring it back full circle to, you know, honoring the traditions of, you know, her cultural cooking. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I love watching her videos because, A, I learn how to cook. And she cooks in a very rustic way, true to what it's like to live on her rancho. And there's, you know, it's not a modern kitchen. I think that's why people are so in love with that channel, because not only do they learn about cooking, but they also kind of harken back and remember their traditional roots, their culture. Especially nowadays with millennials, you know, I think a lot of millennials are looking back to earlier times and really trying to reconnect with, you know, the past that's being forgotten.
Absolutely. I mean, think about all the people that are now doing 23andMe and Ancestry.com. You know, they're wanting to be connected more. I mean, I think that it's kind of cool that Facebook has brought, you know, families that could not stay in touch with each other together. Mm-hmm. And now people are running to have a stronger tie to their family at large and their ancestry, to have that culture Certainly. To enrich their life.
Yeah. The same way that young people watching her channel, I mean, she has over what?
A million.
Yeah, apparently that plaque that she got from YouTube meant that she had surpassed 1 million subscribers. Yeah.
So cool. Yeah.
And the great thing, too, is like even for people that are already connected with her culture, it gives you a different take. So, like, you know, her recipes, she's from the state of Michoacán. So, like, the way they cook there, the traditional foods that we might be familiar with are different. And so you're learning, like, it's a deeper dive, I would say, into culture. Mm-hmm. You know, you learn el estilo michoacano of how to make this or that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, hell, I could get something out of this and like learning, oh, how does she make chilaquiles?
Yeah.
You know, or how does she do that? You know?
Yeah.
I love that.
You could get a lot out of that because I've tasted your cooking. No, I'm just kidding.
He's a great cook. Give him a break.
Sorry. No, but she's a great cook. So. If you guys haven't checked out the channel, you should definitely check it out. Her channel is called De Mi Rancho a Tu Cocina, and it's on YouTube. And check it out.
Yes. And so let's raise our glasses to her.
Woo! Raise our glass.
And it's so good to be back, you guys.
Yes, we've missed you. Back just in time to stay black for Black History Month.
Hi.
Hey.
All right, guys. All right. And let's say SOS on the count of three. 1, 2, 3.
S-O-S-O-S-O. A la Doña Angelita.
Thanks again for listening to El Puente Podcast, an intersectional conversation where all our voices can meet.
Don't just sit there, stand up. Don't just listen, join the conversation.
On Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Patreon. Or email us at bocamadremedia@gmail.com. From Cointel Ho. Nothing gets white people heated like being called white. So I have alternatives. People of no color, alabaster Americans, people of means. Why everything is fucked up. Is this too much? It's probably too much, right?
It's a little much.
Yeah, okay, I was going to say, don't do that.